Lesbian, gay, and bisexual people are incarcerated at a rate 3 times higher than the general population. But as special correspondent Kat Wise reports, when LGBTQ people are released from prison, experts say many reentry programs fail to meet their unique needs. This story is part of our ongoing series, Searching for Justice.
It's now called Doss House, but initially,
for TJ King, visiting Doss House, an LGBTQ bar in Lincoln, Nebraska, is bittersweet. About a decade ago, King, who uses the pronoun they and is non-binary, meaning their gender identity is not strictly male or female, was a partner in a nightclub at this location.
We were one of, I would say, maybe 3 or 4 black business owners that actually had a nightclub. However, that was a period in my life when things were about to spiral drastically out of control. I was in the throes of my addiction. So,
in 2016, King pleaded guilty to possession of ecstasy and 2 counts of theft by deception, leading to a just over 4-year prison term. King had served time for other drug and fraud charges over the years, but this time they vowed to make a change once they were released.
This time I'm like, look, you're going to be 50. You don't have a lot more chances.
But King feared that a traditional reentry housing service, like a halfway house or temporary emergency shelter, would leave them vulnerable to harassment.
I'm going to be in there with the same people that I was just in prison with. I don't want that. If you're somebody that is black, gay, and HIV positive in the prison system, it's just not cool.
King's story is not unique. An estimated 1 in 12 people in prison identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. But experts and advocates say many reentry programs fail to meet their needs once they're released. Among the most vulnerable, trans women.
Because I was transgender, I was policed in a different way.
Jasmine Tasaki is an advocate for the trans community who grew up in Memphis, Tennessee.
When I was young, there was no term called transgender or no term to really help me understand who I was. I can remember as early back as about 3 years old, seeing other little girls and seeing grown women and literally idolizing them, knowing that one day I would be beautiful and knowing that this is who I was, right? But I also had the awareness that whatever I felt about myself was considered to be wrong, was considered to be untrue, and was considered to be dangerous for other children.
She was sexually assaulted as a child and later turned to sex work to make a living.
It was a way for me to regain control over my life, you know, over my sex life, but also over my life because sex had taken control over my life. As a child, you shouldn't have to go through that.
Tasaki was jailed at least 14 times for charges related to sex work. Her experience is common. A 2018 study found that for every time a young trans woman is incarcerated, her odds of recidivism increase. And it said her ability to reintegrate after incarceration may be hindered by the added stigma of being trans. Tasaki says there are few housing options to help stop the cycle.
Once they see that you're trans, you're not getting in the door. Shelters are not letting trans people come in as themselves, and trans people should not be forced to go to one-gender shelters.
Sociologist Joss Green studied reentry programs in San Francisco's Bay Area.
No trans women that I formally interviewed or met in the course of my field research wanted to or felt safe in men's housing programs.
He found that many women's shelters admitted cisgender women, that is, women whose gender identity matches the sex they are assigned at birth, but excluded most trans women.
They were disbelieved as to really being women. For the women that were able to enter these programs, there were then, you know, a series of other challenges connected to the harassment they could experience, both from cisgender women in the program and from the staff themselves.
Back in Nebraska, King says this time coming out of prison was different.
I knew it was going to be a safe space, and that was the thing that was most important to me.
That safe space was this home on a quiet street in Omaha called Leiden House. It's a free housing and support program exclusively for formerly incarcerated LGBTQ people, run by Black and Pink, a national nonprofit. Founded in 2020, it was the brainchild of Black and Pink's former head, Dominique Morgan. King and Morgan were incarcerated together more than 20 years ago.
Tell me about the first moments you walked in here. How did you feel?
Coming from a space where I lived in a room probably about the size of this, with six other gentlemen, where I was able to go into a space where I was able to close the door to the bathroom, was wonderful. I was able to go upstairs and sleep on a bed with a comforter and a real pillow. I could just rest for a second.
Just hearing you describe how important the rest was for you.
Peace.
Peace.
Mm-hmm. And I think Leidenhouse, that's what Leidenhouse is for a lot of people.
You'll notice that everybody will have their own individual bedroom.
Andrew Aliman, a licensed social worker who helped launch Leidenhouse, says the home is designed to be affirming and comfortable.
When they move in, we give them a little welcome pack. And so in the welcome pack, there's like fuzzy slippers, socks, a journal that they can write in. Little things to welcome them and just say, this is your place. We want you to be here. We welcome you here.
On top of covering groceries and utilities, Black and Pink provides personalized services to ease the reentry process, like helping residents apply for jobs, yoga and mindfulness sessions to cope with trauma, cooking and budgeting classes, and helping residents navigate the healthcare system.
That could be mental health care access. That could be access to hormone therapy or just gender-affirming care in general. We try to keep a list of, you know, providers that we know are informed and affirming of LGBTQ individuals. And it's the same for people living with HIV.
10 people, including 8 trans women, have lived in Leidenhouse. Unlike some other transitional housing programs, residents can stay for as long as they need. Trans activist Tasaki oversees some of Black and Pink's programs.
It is a space for LGBTQIA people to come after they are released and not only have a safe place to live, but this is a place for them to thrive and experience joy.
But she says the help Leidenhouse provides is too rare. It is the only residential reentry program in the Midwest that primarily serves trans people, and only 3 residents can live there at a time.
If I had Leiden, I know that I would have been able to make better choices, but also I would have felt seen. But we want to have spaces for people where they are welcome and where they are celebrated.
King says staying at Leidenhouse for more than a year gave them the opportunity to find their calling.
Right.
Today, they work at the Nebraska AIDS Project, the only community-based AIDS service organization in the state. King aims to give clients hope, something King says they needed when they were diagnosed with HIV in 1993.
I never, ever, ever want anybody to ever feel the way that I felt when I got my result. My main goal is making sure that the diagnosis that I have just given you is life-altering, but it's not life-ending.
King now lives in their own apartment and has been sober for more than 5 years.
Where do you think you would be today if you hadn't found Leidenhouse?
Had it not been for Leidenhouse, a lot of things would have probably turned out different for me. I say that because for me, I owe a lot to Leidenhouse. I owe a lot to them.
With the help of a supportive landing place, King is leading a life they couldn't have imagined just a few years ago. For the PBS NewsHour, I'm Kat Wise in Omaha, Nebraska.